I suppose we need to make some sort of pronouncements so that you would know what we're doing, but let's talk about them a little bit. What are your plans? What's the commission they've been talking about it, and what have they been saying about them?
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, that one I'm going to defer to the director because that's a policy decision, not a fiscal.
Director Farrell, good move.
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, it's been our intent that those would remain frozen for the biennium. So that's how we've kind of adjusted our capacity to deal with that. If they became permanently gone, we'd like to revisit which ones those are with you, because the services division, our fiscal division has been hit particularly hard. Is it 5 of the 10 are in your division?
No, we have 2 of the 10.
The services that have the most.
Services have 6. We have 2, but it's the highest percentage.
But it hasn't been it's been a disparate hit across our agency. So we would want to. So the services division's been the one that's been particularly hard hit with those freezes, and there's some pretty critical positions in there that, you know, we can get along with for 2 years or without for 2 years, but we'd sure like to visit with you about the permanency of those freezes.
Well, I think there's a couple issues there. One is that if you froze particular slots and we're allowing you, if you will, to move it in, so you froze 5 fiscal people, but you have another position open up and you sort of swap out, so you swap out a biologist for an accountant. Ultimately, your FTE count remains the same. During our markup, I expect that we're going to have a discussion with respect to whether to make those positions permanent, those freezes. I think there. So if we do that, and if there's an impact on you, that you need some flexibility moving positions around. But frankly, I hadn't thought that. I assume that you could move positions around within your budget. You could take a fisheries guys over to, if you will, an accountant. But I'm not clear on that, mind. I mean, Richard, generally, what's the rule on that?
Richard, can you help us on that?
Yeah, or Kathy.
Madam Chairman, Senator Nicholas, the personnel system and how we build the budgets, if you would say, you know, they're going to reduce their permanent count by 10, we could work with the agency and determine which 10 that they want to give up. You know, you wouldn't have to specify the exact position numbers. The agency, you could put language in the Section 300 that the agency would work with us to determine what exact specific positions that they wanted to give up.
Richard, the problem is that you say, okay, these are the positions I'm going to eliminate last year. We make those permanent. Now this year you're saying, look, really we gave you those positions because they were vacant. But if there was a long-term decision, here's really the configuration we'd want. We'd want one to be a fiscal guy instead of a biologist or swapping it. Let's talk in generic terms. Suppose I'm an agency out there and I've got my budget and it's already passed and I would like to have an extra fiscal person. Do I have the prerogative as an agency to say I'm going to eliminate a position in one part of my budget and just move the position over to another part of my budget?
Well, Mr. Chairman, if we want to keep it real simple, if there is a vacancy, yes, that position could be reclassified through ANIHR from a program person to, say, an accountant, and then that position can be moved over into the accounting section and they could hire the accountant. Now, if there's a person in the position that they want to move from a program person over to an accountant, and that person may or may not qualify mm-hmm. for the accounting job. You could get into RIF issues and all that type of stuff. But if they're vacant positions, they can get them reclassified through HR and move them around through the B-11 process and hire who they want, yes.
Okay, well, if that's the answer, if suppose we start a program and we authorize 4 FTEs to run that program, what assurances do we have that the employees are going to be used for the programs that we authorize instead of just going to H&R and say, that was great, the legislature gave us four positions, now we want to reclassify those two positions to operate another program.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's where, you know, our office would come into play and the governor's office would come into play. If it was something that was a major deal, we would probably not allow that to happen. But if they wanted to move one person around or something, our philosophy is we let the directors try to manage their program as best they can be. But if it was a program that was specifically authorized for a specific purpose, we would step in and say, you know, nah, you better look somewhere else.
Well, I think that's where we have to be careful, folks, because as we're going through this, we authorize positions for programs to run them. And it's our expectation if we give employees, they're going to run the programs that we set up. And so I'm a little reluctant to say, geez, you can float your positions around. I mean, we need to have from the agencies, if they want to move during the – it's one thing if it's off budget, but if we're here during session, the supplemental budget, if an agency wants to move a position, reclassify one, I'd expect them to come to us in the supplemental budget and ask for the reclassification.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, that's what we require, too. If we get enough notice, you know, and you'll see throughout the budgets that they've come in and we say, you know, this needs to be a budget issue. You know, we're not going to let you reclassify a job and move it from program X to program Y because that wasn't the intent when they gave you the program under program X. We would make that a supplemental or even a biannual. We do that in the biannual request where they try to move positions around. We have the flexibility through the Chapter 17. As long as the funding remains the same, they can maybe shuffle positions between programs. But if it's a program that was specifically passed, that, you know, that had specific requirements, we wouldn't even allow that through the Chapter 17 process. We would make them come in and do a supplemental budget and get not only the governor's okay on it, but a legislative approval also.
But that's what I wanted to hear.
Okay.
So now going back to Director Farrell, let's assume that we do make those positions. I mean, we could do it two things, continue the freeze and we'll do it in the general budget, but if we eliminate them now, you might give us a proposal of how you'd want them. If you want them reclassified, let us know before the markup.
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, that'd be helpful. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Yeah, that was good.
Mr. Chairman? Can I offer a point of clarification here?
Yeah.
I believe that the positions that they're talking about, that the Game and Fish Department's talking about, are on their commission side of their budget. So it would be commission action that's frozen those positions. You guys haven't actually frozen any positions in this. As far as the positions that you deal with in the Game and Fish budget, you're only talking 24 full-time positions associated with the vet services and with this aquatic invasive and all the others.
Well, Bill, that's a good point, but I guess the issue is I think the governor's office is the one that directed them to do the 10% cuts like everybody else. Since we have the capacity, though, to direct that whatever cuts they make or at least the 10% become permanent, what I want to avoid is if we tell the general fund agencies that your position, those frozen positions are gone, we're going to sweep them, if you will, and cast them out, then the question is, do we address the commission side of the budget and just let them do it, or we direct the commission to make theirs permanent? Now, if we directed them, you're right, then the commission could go in and reclassify them. We wouldn't have to reclassify them. But I guess what I'm not hoping to happen is that is to forget about you guys and make the other agencies' positions permanent, and then at the end of the biennium, the commission say, well, we're not under that sweep, so we'll reinstate our positions. So I think what I have in mind is that, and I know that we don't regulate your positions, but the 10% cuts for 10% cuts, and I think we're leaning towards, well, I don't know what we're leaning, but I kind of think that there will be a discussion that maybe those ought to be permanent, and if we make those cuts permanent, that they would apply the commission side of the budget too. Maybe that's right. Maybe we don't have to deal with classification. That would be the commission could reclassify and reclassify. all we'd want to see is the FTE count made permanent of whatever its current level is. Fine, we'll just talk about it during markup, but you, yeah.
Representative Stewart.
Madam Chair, would it be all right to ask a question about the wigwam?
Yes, we're back on the wigwam rearing station. So you better be careful, Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
First thing, Mr. Director, where is this place at, the wigwam rearing station?
Madam Chair, Representative Stewart, wigwams near Tensley.
And, Madam Chair, Mr. Director, I seem to remember we've done some work on this at this facility before with respect to the whirling disease issue. I mean, do you have that number handy, how much we've spent so far dealing with this whirling disease problem?
Madam Chair, I'd like to defer the answer to Assistant Division Chief Fouten.
All right.
Thank you. Go
Madam
ahead.
Madam Chair, Representative Stewart, about $600,000, a combination of general fund appropriations and commission dollars, went into the first project at Wigwam. At that time, it was a biosecurity concern looking at specifically covering the raceways and eliminating dirt ponds. This is a new problem, totally unthought about, unforeseen, in that we have actually seen the organism in the water source itself. So that's what we're doing, is treating the water source. Much different problem that we're addressing this time than previously.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Of course, we look at these capital construction requests as one-time funding. One has to wonder, is this turning on to an ongoing expense? At what point do you see an end to this problem with this appropriation? We'll be over $1 million. At what point do you say enough's enough? Or, you know, I'm not a biologist by any means, but, you know, what do you think? Is this it, or do you finally get to a point and say, let's just move this somewhere where it's safe?
Madam Chair, Representative Stewart. We had a 10-year, still are working on a 10-year capital facility improvement plan. This project and the one across the street at Tensleep happened at the same time, where the spores showed up in what is considered a secure water source. That water source was, neither of those water sources was in our 10-year plan for security. So this is very much in addition. And unforeseen. And so I would say it's not going to keep coming back, but it really truly was a mystery how these things showed up in these two water sources considered spring water and secure.
Mr. Fouten, you have the Tensleep project completed?
Madam Chair, it's about 60% complete at this time.
Okay.
Are we... So you're taking surface water and treating it? I mean, you do not have the capacity just to drill for well water, and or do you get the same problem? I assume that well water wouldn't have it, but...
Mr. Fouten.
Senator Nicholas, these are spring sources. That's the mystery. We are not using surface water. If it were surface water, we would have looked at biosecurity measures as part of our 10-year plan. So this is truly, as I said, unforeseen.
Well, I understand. I mean, I don't think a spring is as, I mean, spring's got to come to the surface. So you're coming through, unless you're penetrating down 70 or 80 feet to pick up your water. I guess the question is it cheaper? Have you investigated whether it's cheaper to treat the waters you're doing or just drill wells?
Mr. Powell.
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, yes, we've looked at that, those options. These are deeper than 70, 80 feet. And again, there is no surface water connection to these.
And obviously, you haven't found out how they got there.
The scientists are baffled. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Baffled. That's a good word for this session. Okay. Thank you, Mark. Okay, continue, Director.
Madam Chair, I'd move on to the comfort stations.
Oh, yes, we like comfort stations. Okay.
We are requesting funding for...
We typically do, yes.
For five of those in this package. You have obviously funded some of these in the past. To give you a feel of where we're at, there's... There's 167 of these in our inventory. You have helped us refurbish 16 of them already. This is an additional five. We know of 26 more that are in the queue that we would like to, on our construction plan, get done in the near future. That's 26 more beyond these five. There's 11 new ones that we anticipate building at some point and 15 that are in need of repair. These five here are ones that are in need of repair. Any questions on... Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, that's right. These are replacements. So they're unbelievably expensive.
Yes.
They're ADA compliant. They're concrete-lined vaults that are maintained by pump out. They're largely in areas with low water tables because they're near fishing access points, and that's why they're as expensive as they are.
And this group that you have here are high-use areas,
and
that's why they're the priority list?
They are. Okay, Madam Chair, moving on to the public access request. This is at the Summers Grindstone conservation easement. There's new public access plan 5 miles of the Upper Green River for fishermen. This would provide a brand new comfort station, some improved boat ramp facilities, barriers for the parking area, and upgrading existing roads at both of the sites. This is not just Summers Grindstone. The second site is nearby on the New Fork River. Both of these are south of Pinedale.
Let's talk about this one a moment. What makes this different from other of your capital expenditures, and why? What caused you to bring it to the general fund?
Madam Chair, Representative Nicholas, this is... These are two areas that don't have public access facilities at the time. There's some public access there, but this would upgrade these facilities so that they're safer, easier to use. It'd be a service to the public to be able to provide better access to these two waterways near Pinedale.
Mr. Director, though, did you comment that this is new access area because of an easement? Conservation easement?
Madam Chair, the easement is new. The Summers Grindstone is where the easement is, but I believe this access point is actually a brand new one, not to upgrade the existing one. This would be at a takeout point below the existing facility.
On things like this, do you make efforts to go to the Wildlife Trust Fund? Do you look for other sources of revenues? What other options have you investigated to pay for these?
Ms. Frank.
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, the one piece of property, Summers Grindstone, was just recently acquired, and that is a conservation easement. We hold the fishing access. There are other entities that hold the actual conservation easement. It was a multi-million dollar project, of which most of the funding came from federal funds or third parties. And so the department did put some funding into it, but the majority of funding, around 75 to 80% of the total acquisition came from third parties, and this is just to do an improvement on this particular property. Most of many of the habitat projects we've had in the last 3 to 4 years, funding has come from third-party funding. The Natural Resource Trust Board has been a significant player, and then also several private entities like the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation.
Well, I guess that's – let me take off from there, because if the notion is that third parties folks are going to come out and acquire easements and then expect us to provide the general funds to do improvements, that's an interesting – I mean, I understand why we would do it, but the flip side of it is that if we're going to try to constrain you to your commission budget as much as possible – and only get into financing things that, rearing stations are a good example of something we simply said we've got to deal with. Comfort stations, we've had debate whether that's our role or whether that's the commission side of the budget. And this one looks to now we're expanding your services through the general fund. It's a different characterization or type of project than we typically fund, I think.
Is it possible with this type of project to kind of get the overview of the third party's involvement, so the total cost picture of having this access area or this land available to the public?
Madam Chair, as far as this project goes, there isn't any third party funding.
The
easement of the Summers Grindstone, there were many, many parties that helped purchase that. That was a multi-million-dollar easement. And then the New Fork was actually a land donation made by the owner to the departments. There was no money involved in that acquisition.
And both of these properties, Madam Chair, are held by the department as access easements. We had other parties involved in a bigger project, but this portion is an easement that the department holds.
Well, folks, I mean, as we go through the markup, you just have to be thinking about what the philosophy is, what do we constrain the department to, and where do we let the constraints off, and whether you find this within those constraints or outside those constraints, or whether you think it's big enough or a benefit, but it's at least a discussion to be had.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Director, I'm a little rusty on this, but I am aware of a program that you have that's funded through user fees. When they buy a license, that those dollars go to access areas. Isn't that correct, Mr. Director?
Madam Chair, Representative Stewart, you're right. We do have a robust access program that not only it provides access to waters, but also big game, upland game bird habitat, but they can't be used for construction. Those funds can't be used for construction.
And Madam Chair, how does one find the list of projects that's funded through that program and what that budget is? Is that why would this not fall under the constraints of that program?
Madam Chair, Representative Stewart, we can provide you with that information. The reason this one can't is it's a construction project, and the access program cannot be used for construction projects. It can only be used for making payments to landowners to allow access. That's the primary expenditure.
Get follow-up.
Not at this time, Madam Chair. Thanks.
All right. Continue, Director.
Madam Chair, there's no other questions on the two access projects. The last one in our request is the fence projects. The department has in its inventory 92 miles of elk fence associated with our feed grounds. The majority of those are in the Pinedale and Alpine areas of the state. These fences essentially direct elk to the feed ground, prevent commingling with livestock, and limit elk damage on private lands. These two are the two of the biggest ones in the state. While we've maintained them for decades, these two require some extensive renovation. One of them is 13 miles long in the Afton area, and the other one is a fence that's 25 and a half miles long near Fremont Lake. So this is more than a maintenance project. This is a major renovation of two of our largest fences, which would include replacing posts, braces, and gates.
Questions of the committee?
Same questions. Tell us a little bit why this. It seems to me this is one that's you've been historically maintaining. You ought to have your own plan on how you're going to replace, and now you're shifting it to the non-commissioned budget. Just give us a little more background why you picked it out to bring it to us, and why you can't pick it up in your commission side of the budget.
Go ahead, Mr. Perry.
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, if this isn't appropriated by the legislature, that's the way we'll have to address it. We'll address it in the same old Band-Aid way we have been, just through maintenance. These fences, are 40 and 60 years old, and we would continue just, maintaining it as opposed to renovating it. The $242,000 isn't in our maintenance budget to do a renovation.
Well, I assume that if your maintenance budget is one thing, but you must have some sort of a sinking fund or an allocation of your budget that you build for major projects. Otherwise, you wouldn't be building anything. So it's not important enough first of all, I assume you have such a type of budget, either sinking fund or you plan for major remodeling of facilities improvements. So what you're telling me is this just didn't make it into that type of planning.
Director Farrell.
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, I guess what I'm saying is if this was to be done on commission dollars, it would be a line item in their commission budget that we would take to them in the annual budget review. It hasn't been the priority to get it there yet. So we've been, it will come up someday in the commission budget.
What caused, you just presented it to the governor and said, hey, here's projects we have. Maybe you tell us a little bit of how your budget got put together. Did you sit down with the governor and say, hey, look, here's all the things. Are there any of these that you want to support, or what was the development process?
Director Farrell.
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, when we sat down with the governor, we asked him if he'd be willing to support some capital construction projects, and he said he would. So we submitted these projects, and these are the ones he chose to support.
Tell us about the projects you submitted that he didn't choose to support.
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, I don't know that. I think these were all the projects we submitted.
Highest priority projects not on the commission schedule for replacement.
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, that's correct.
And you're going to show us, Kathy, some, what the commission is doing with its capital dollars.
Senator Nicholas, we do a listing each year for the commission and as part of the commission budget of what our capital construction dollars are out of their budget. We will provide that.
And then maybe be sure to show us what they approved, what they didn't approve, and maybe give us some feel for what the traditional amount of capital construction is. And if it shows that there's been a decline in what they typically would approve or an increase, show us that, if you will, just so we know.
That's it, Director Farrell.
Madam Chair, that concludes our presentation.
Thank you very much for updating us. Appreciate your time. Folks, we have DEQ out in the lobby waiting for us. So we're ready to start them. Does anyone want to take a five-minute break? Okay, five-minute break. And then we'll, just let you know, we'll have to finish them up probably upon adjournment, so we may need to adjust that time.
I missed one.
Typo in that elk fence. It should be like root protects elk from Route 89 or keeping them off. It says Route 191. But the way I read it, I can't. 191 doesn't extend from Alpine South to Afton.
No, that'd be the pine.
Yeah, but the way the period, then it starts into the other one. 50 miles south, the elk fence also uses keep off 91. Yeah, that's right.
You get out of your way.
No,
trying to get under our
we'll let you have the hot seat.
So anyway, I missed the name.
Yeah. If I want to use your terminology, we're kind of
we can go over with Rich when we get back or whatever and see. I tried to write down.
It's the power cord. He's got that over there.
Well, you know,
they know. Yeah.
You know.
So now he has to keep up.
He didn't get it to me.
There's one right here.
Right down underneath.
I think we got to go here.
There. Right, just drop it through there. Just
drop it through the hole.
Drop
it through the hole.
Oh, wait, there's one right here.
Good.
We don't know if it works.
So when are they going to bring that?
Well, here's what I
decided. This works.
Well, it might. Well, I've got my charger and the projector. I want this, come on. Oh, yeah, but you gave it to me. Got it. I didn't bring my air card, so.
Here.
I don't think I need it. Oh, I don't think I need it. We need that gizmo, right? So let's get the projector up.
Gentlemen, I'm very sorry about that delay. Invasive species, and it took longer than
those costs. Okay, well, we can go fast.
You're basically, your position
the position, the governor's plan, and our AML.
Right.
So you've gone through the AML last time.
Yeah, we did.
I'm going to rocket through it, and I'll give you some very verbal stuff on what we're doing on landfall.
I know.
Yeah.
Legislature's in town.
Yeah, you turn on your projector, John.
Yeah.
I got your all your little things.
Yeah, we're gonna have to turn this up. Okay, what do I got? Which one, Jim?
Four. Yep.
One to the right.
Yep.
Don's over here.
Normally.
All right. Then let's do this. Let me get to the middle.
Okay, we can't block this, John.
Well. How's this? All right, now what I got to do, Jim, come on, let's get I got my notes and I got the budget and I got the presentation. Right?
You need to. You want me to handle this?
Well, I think you need to.
Go ahead and hit project. show. Jim, I'm going to whatever these pages are.
Okay. Hey, you can point out.
Scoot over and give me one more.
You can point out to Mr. Nicholas I have a smaller briefcase due to the austerity.
Thank you.
not sure, committee, that we can get DEQ done in 5 minutes, but we can try, Senator Nicholas. What do you think? We're all set up anyway. Mr. Core, I think what will help happen here is maybe you can give us your opening remarks, and then we should probably have you come back and committee. We were scheduled for 1 o'clock. I think if you could be back here at 12:30, would that be okay, committee? All right, 12:30 we'll return. Thank you. Mr. Good morning.
Okay. Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Right, and you can leave your equipment here for later.
Okay. Do
you have your mic on, John?
Hold on. Okay, great. Madam Chair, the first I want to just introduce who's with me today to help with this process. On my left is Don McKenzie, who is the administrator of the Land Quality Division, and that's one of the pieces of our supplemental budget. To my right is Jim Uzel. He's the administrative services guy and the accountant and the numbers guy. And then behind me to the right is Steve Dietrich. I don't know whether you've met him yet. He's the new Air Quality Division Administrator. He's been here since probably about May or June. Comes to us from Virginia. In the back against the wall is Todd Parfit, the Deputy Director. And then we have Alan Edwards, who is the new Abandoned Mine Lands Administrator. And Alan has been with us for about 7 months as well.
Welcome.
Great. So Alan will come up to help with the abandoned mine land stuff if you have any questions there. So, okay. Mm-hmm. And we'll get started. The budget is fairly simple, and we have two pieces to this thing. One is a land quality piece, and the other is a the second year funding for the abandoned mine lands reclamation program. So we can draw your attention to page 11 in the budget book.
Great.
But also, I've got some slides back here that sort of provide a better summary, and I can go either way, whichever way you want to go, but I'll refer to the slide to start with.
Okay, thank you.
The slide just talks about what exactly the two areas are. The first area is Land Quality Division staff for permitting purposes, and the request is for 4 full-time equivalents, and the that was the original budget, and then we had $50.1 million for the Abandoned Mine Lands Program. Governor Meade's recommendation is on the right, and Governor Meade is saying he's okay with the 4 FTEs, however he wants to be 11 those in after the session from vacancies in other places in the state. So there's there's no money for salaries in this budget for those 4 people because he'll do that process via a B-11 later. That's his recommendation. And then he's also...
Folks, let's talk about that. Just and when we get into the markup, the issue is going to be is if we froze positions, and there's frozen positions, and if the executive branch is simply going in to recover frozen positions, that's one issue. That would be part of the 10% frozen positions. And then if you have vacancies, you have a number of vacancies that might be held out there that might be 50, 3 years vacancies, 4 years vacancies, and for a variety of reasons, agencies have told us that they intend to fill those. Please don't take them from us for a variety of reasons. And so if what the governor does is go find vacancies that have been vacant for 12 months, 13 months, 2 years, that goes back to kind of the same discussion we had before, and that is, does the executive branch have the prerogative simply to go around and start moving positions around? But if you have long-standing vacancies, you move them to DEQ. That's growth. I don't care how you look at it. So
mm-hmm.
Part of what we're going to need, I'm not sure that we have a great explanation, but simply saying we'll pull them from another somebody else's vacancy pool. If you look at any given time, in fact, let's get our vacancy numbers, Richard, just so everybody can see it. But at any given time, all the government's going to have 5, 6, 10% vacancies just because that's part of running government. Richard, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, Mr. Senator Nicholas. We'll get you a vacancy report as of December 31st. The positions in this particular request for DEQ, they are part of the 25 positions that the governor, you gave the flexibility to move around of the 251 that are frozen. So these are not other positions that are vacant out within other agencies. These are part of that original 25 that he can, you gave him authority.
How many of those 25 have we filled, or what's left out there?
One.
I think there's
only
one
out of 25.
So there's 24 of them left.
Well, I think we gave that authority to the last governor, not this one.
Okay.
Well, you're the attorney, Mr.
Chair.
So, Madam Chair, I'll move on. And I actually got to another page.
That almost fell on deaf ears. Boswell wasn't even here.
He missed that wonderful comment.
It was such a good comment, I should restate it.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Great. So,
go ahead,
so really, So the detail on this, on the slide that I have up now, which would be page 3 in the handout you have, just look at the part of the page underneath the governor's recommendation. So as we mentioned just now, there's the B-11 process for the four people, and then $160,000 of support costs. $60,000 of that is standard support costs. $100,000 of that is follow-up to a organizational review that we did last fall in the Land Quality Division. And then lastly, on the contractual line is $1.5 million, which the governor spoke to you about, I believe, yesterday. And I can provide some detail behind that as we go forward. But
that'd be good.
But the overview is simply that. It's the people. It's in land quality. It's the money for the project to reduce backlog.
Right.
And moving on, the next page that I want to draw to your attention is, if I go to page 4 in your handout and up here on the screen, and all this is, and we won't dwell on it, but it's a tracking mechanism we use for new permits and authorizations as well as maintenance of existing permits. And the two curves basically are the red is the backlog and the blue are the approvals that we have in any given year. So on the left-hand side, you see the permit maintenance activity, and it let me just double check on that. That's right. And you can see that the backlog is growing even though our approvals are growing, and that's just because as we get more permits out there approved and operations running, and as these operations change, and quite honestly, they've been very dynamic over the last number of years, we're seeing a lot of requests for things like monitoring, baseline collection, incidental boundary revisions, and things of that sort. On the new permits and authorizations, the number of approvals have dropped in the last couple of years. We expect that to go up, but a lot of that had to do with the uranium permitting complexities that we ran into, and as you can see, the backlog hasn't changed much there. So point of the slides is only to give you a little visual that says, you know, the governor's request for the $1.5 million and him requiring us to develop proper plans to tackle that, that's all aimed at reversing those trends on the backlog.
Madam Chairman.
Go ahead.
Now,
we're going to have to go in here. It's probably a good time to break. We'll come back in. A couple of things I'd like to, Director, have you talk to us when you come back.
Uh-huh.
One of the things, maybe Richard, if you could bring back a completed B-11 form and a copy of the statute, maybe our staff get a copy of the B-11 statute so folks can actually see what a B-11 form is. And what it looks like, Amy, did you already get one? Is that okay? Why don't you get your form, and then we'll get the statute, show everybody what it is, what a B-11 is, what the prerogative is, how the process works.
I also have a whole file of this year's B-11s with me right here.
That's a report. I want the actual B-11 form so that they can see one that's completed and approved by the governor. Is that what you had, Amy? Well, why don't you give that to the staff for copying for everybody. But let's get a completed B-11 form that's been approved so people could see what it actually looks like. We'll go over that a little bit. Director Corr, I tell you, a couple things I'd like you to talk to is, I mean, this is not the first time that you've come to us to say your permitting's down, you've showed us beautiful graphs, and we've given you more positions for permitting.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd like, if you can, go back and maybe show us the FTE, new FTEs we've given you for air quality, land quality, for permit approvals. Wasn't too long ago that permit applications were down. We asked you if we could take positions away. My recollection is you provide an explanation that you're moving them into enforcement, for example, CBM water reservoir work. So it sounds like you've put them in enforcement. And I'll be honest with you, we're not hearing kind words about both air quality and land quality with respect to the permit, the activities they're getting out of, or that the permit review speed. We've got people out there saying that they've got sister operations in other states that take weeks to get permits. You're taking months and years, and it seems to me that we may have a more generic or systemic problem than simply FTE counts. I don't know whether we have enough time to get into that, but if you'll be prepared to talk about some of those issues when we get back.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Madam Chair, if I can, one last thing to say is that on page 9 of the budget book, There is a table there that we provided back last fall that talked about permit backlog, permit maintenance actions, and things of that sort. And those numbers are erroneous. We have a table. We can provide a new table if we need to, but these numbers are incorrect.
And then so I think added to the request by the senator is just a review, too, for the committee on the efficiency of the new automation and where you're at with that
IT
and
project.
How that's addressing some of these issues, too.
Right.
Okay. All right. Thank you, everyone, and we'll see you all at 12:30.
Bill, I'm unaware of the air quality problem. Do you have some detail on that?
I'm not got those guys.